right here in Waterbury. Let me give you the Waitsfield number, and that's 496-2080, 496-2080. Would you like to have your policies reviewed? And it's free of charge. If you're an individual, just call that number, and they'll be happy to do it for you right there over the phone. If you own a business, it gets a little more complicated. But John Jameson will travel to you. He's, going to close that gap between himself as an insurance person and the people, kind of like John was suggesting that some of us in the media need to do. Call him at 496-2080, and he'll make an appointment with you. Then he'll review your policies right there on site, and then he'll be happy to write up a report, let you know if you're getting the best possible deal. I know you may not need insurance today. Keep the Jameson name in mind. 496-2080. We've been talking with John Walters, a blogger who writes at thevpo.org. Goodness knows what you might get if you don't put that "the" in there. What's vpo.org get you to, John?
I'm not sure. When I set up a Twitter account, I had to go with the VPO1 because the VPO is taken, I think, by the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra.
Yeah, and you're offering up a slightly different brand of music than that. All right, let's go to Huntington next. Rich, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I know you guys, we talked about a lot of this yesterday, but I seem to be hearing a lot on blogs and general discussion about by advocates of health care reform, trying to minimize the impact of Shumlin's health care policies on the closeness of this vote. I mean, there are a lot of reasons that his base, as well as the far left in Vermont, turned on him. And, his failure to the height of arrogance here is his failure to reveal a funding source of his health care plan until after the election, the way he treated Doug Racine, his backing of big wind projects, questionable real estate transaction with a neighbor, advocacy for Gaz Metro's pipeline, absenteeism running around the country for the DGA, and his backing of the F-35 fighter plane. But I think anyone who's trying to make excuses and minimize the impact of what happened here based on health care needs to really look at what you guys mentioned a little bit earlier, is the fact that his point man in the House, the chair of the House Health Care Committee, he has served since the year 2000 in the House, Mike Fisher, was shown the door on Tuesday.
Well, not to mention, too, the poor showing by Dean Corn. I mean, he really put a lot all in on health care reform.
Yeah, I mean, nationally or statewide. I mean, this is, when you mess with something as basic as that without a firm plan, people get nervous.
Yeah. All right, John, what do you say to that?
Well, I think he's right, and I think it's still possible to pursue single payer, but he is right, Rich is right, that the advocates are whistling past the graveyard here. It just got a whole lot harder to pursue single payer, and a lot of that is on Governor Shumlin. He ran in 2010 on single payer, and it probably won him the Democratic nomination in a very tough five-way primary. And he is in great peril of failing to deliver on that, central promise of his administration. And right now, it should not be his top priority. His top priority in health care needs to be getting Vermont Health Connect to work.
Mm-hmm.
After that, if he can come up with a good plan that convinces people that it can work, then he can pursue single-payer health care. But he's got much more, he's got to get the fundamentals right before he starts, in football, they would say you got to establish the ground game before you start chucking the ball all over the place. And that's what he's got to do.
And you can't just blame a poor turnout, because, as you pointed out, talk about the contrast between what, say, Jim Condos and some of the other Democratic candidates got compared to Shumlin.
Yeah. I mean, the difference between, say, Peter Welch and Peter Shumlin was about 33,000 votes. That's more than one quarter of the voters who opted for Peter Welch refused to vote for Peter Shumlin. And, if you look at all the other races, there are other factors in all the other races, obviously, but if you look at all the other races and the number of Democrats who won for the legislature, there were a lot of people who voted for Democrats up and down the ticket except for Peter Shumlin and Dean Corin. That has to reflect on Shumlin's own failings and Shumlin's own perceived failings more than it does on his policies. So, you know, like I say, he's got to reassess, and he's got to decide, what he wants his next act to be. You know, he's a strong enough politician. He's a strong enough leader to do something good with whatever remains of his time in politics. But he's going to have to refocus, and he's going to have to take a long, hard look at himself, and he hasn't had to do that in a very long time.
Well, let's not forget, he did rise from the ashes once before.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, you know, he is demonstrably stronger in crisis than he is in a day-to-day management situation. You know, his finest hour was after Tropical Storm Irene. And you can say he did a lot of stuff that anybody would have done. But, you know, he was not only a strong manager who directed the assets of the state where they needed to go, but he was an inspirational leader. And that was really the only time you can say that about Peter Shumlin. And this, for him, is an opportunity. It should be an opportunity, it can be an opportunity for him to go into crisis mode and to really assess everything. And he could come out of it stronger. It's not going to be easy, and the odds are against him. But, hey, when the odds are against him, he seems to do better than when the odds are for him.
There's always Dick Nixon, too, to point to.
We are willing to give people second acts if they seem to be authentically interested in you know, doing what's best.
But third acts, John? Let's go to Barry. Bill, good morning.
Good morning. Boy, I like your conversation. This is great. A little while ago, you were mentioning how Scott Mill, at the beginning of his campaign, wasn't set on what he was on the issues and solid with a plan. Let me put it this way. Scott Mill has run a successful travel agency for many, many years. In fact, he improved upon that agency as it goes along. And that wouldn't have happened if he had not been flexible. I guess I use that word, flexible. He has people working for him. If he was the governor, he'd have commissioners, he'd have secretaries, and people on down the line. And when things change, he's got to be able to change with it. So I think I talked to him a couple of months ago, first time I met him at a meeting, and he wasn't very solid either way on health care. He had ideas, but he talked to a lot of people, and he has become more solid on his position with health care because of new things he learned and because of things change. So, and he listened.
What do you mean by that? That he became more solid on health care? Tell me what you mean.
Well, he definitely was the latest from hearing to him, and I actually saw him the night before the election night, he wasn't in favor of at this time passing single payer. I think that was pretty clear. At least from my conversation, it seemed pretty clear. Now, that is something that he would be flexible on in the future. He might even change that, because he is the kind of person that I think there's no question that he listens to what other people say. And again, running a business, he would listen to the people who work for him. So I think that he is a person who, and Phil Scott's that kind of person as well. There's a lot about those two that I say are quite similar. But the main thing, no matter who's, what party they are, who they are. I've talked to Dick Sears, who's a Democrat, and you think I wouldn't agree with him on a lot of things. But he has listened. He listens to a lot of things. And people like that who listen and change their positions, you say, oh, they changed their position. It's terrible. No, it isn't. If they think if the climate changes. You know the climate changes. You're driving down the road, and there's going to be an ice storm up ahead of you. You're not going to go. And so that's the kind of leaders we need.
All right, let me get John to comment. Thank you for your call, Bill.
First of all, let me say that I'm really enjoying this conversation. You have some smart listeners on the left and on the right, and they have a lot to contribute.
I don't underestimate their intelligence.
I'm learning
trying to,
a lot.
Trying to close the gap a little here, John.
There we go. Well, you know, I think Bill's right. You know, Scott Mill's strongest selling point, if you want to put it in those terms, was his success as a manager. It was easy to overlook the fact that he had had a long and very successful career in business. You know, not only as a travel agent, but also as in real estate. He has sizable real estate investments, and those have been a success as well. And he was seen as someone, and he presented himself as a person who would listen, and who would. You know, we all thought that he was being indecisive, and we kind of laughed at him. But, you know, he said, look, you know, I will listen, and we will work together, and we'll make decisions together. And if the Democrats have a good idea, I'll accept it. And, you know, that was a very attractive message, especially in contrast to a guy who seemed like he wasn't listening, or that he'd stopped listening a long time ago.
Let's go to Waitsville. Jim, good morning.
Oh, hi. I won't belabor the point, but I do have to say that I've always voted Democratic. The last Republican I voted for was Ed Brooke when Paul Tsongas was running against him in Massachusetts, and I thought Ed Brooke deserved to be a senator because he was a good senator.
We're talking about 1980.
I did not vote for. I voted for Milne and Scott this year. Solely my reason and was to punish them for Vermont Health Connect. We are one of the people who was thrown in to Vermont Health Connect from the Chamber of Commerce system that used to work perfectly well. And they've been arrogant about it. If Vermont Health Connect was a company, it would have been out of business 2 months after it started.
Mm-hmm.
And they've acted arrogant about it. And it's arrogance all the way down. We have had to have so much intervention with our state rep, Adam Gresham, and other. We have never had a Health Connect person say, oh, we're sorry. It's just the arrogance up and down the line. You know, and then Dean Corn takes public money to lecture us about how he's going to change the role of the lieutenant governor to do policy. You know, Howard Dean. I was working in the State House when Howard Dean was lieutenant governor. And I think Howard Dean's finest moment was one day. I hate to laugh while the guy lived, but somebody collapsed. Somebody in the gallery collapsed at the State House, and Howard Dean immediately flipped into doctor mode and, you know, saved the guy. He didn't get into policy when he was lieutenant governor. You know, he waited until he was governor. You know, until the sad event made him governor. But anyway, So that's all I have to say. I mean, it was a pure, you know, they're at fault, and they need to know they're at fault.
Thanks for your call, Jim. Okay. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And before I respond to Jim, I'll just say that I and probably a lot of other people, but I owe Randy Brock a big apology because he wrote an opinion piece over a year ago now that said Vermont Health Connect will not work. And, you know, I accepted the reassurances of the administration at face value. I said, I thought, well, they must know what they're doing. And, you know, Randy Brock is just, you know, sour grapes about losing to Peter Shumlin. Randy Brock was right. You know, Vermont Health Connect doesn't work yet. And we don't know when it will work. There was an article on VT Digger last Friday about not only a financial shortfall, a potential financial shortfall next year, but a broad array of other problems that are still existing in Vermont Health Connect that don't show any sign of getting better. And until Vermont Health Connect works, we can't go forward with anything else in healthcare reform. And, you know, Governor Shumlin did not fully accept responsibility. You know, he and his administration kept issuing reassurance after reassurance and minimizing the problems, and Randy Brock was right. And, that was a big part of, that was the single biggest thing that made Governor Shumlin look like an administrative failure, and that was a big part of why he almost lost the race.
844-1777 is our local number. Toll-free, 877-291-8255. Let's go up to beautiful North Hero. Hi, Janine.
Yes, it is beautiful. I just wanted to say that I heard somebody mention yesterday, and I thought it was an interesting take on the election with regard to Feliciano. Somebody called in and said they think that it wasn't so much that he took votes away, but that he made people think about the mistakes that Shumlin has been making because Scott Milne wasn't doing that. And they pointed out the fact that all the things that Scott Milne didn't seem to be saying, or if he did, he did it in a different way or too late. But from the very beginning, Feliciano was pointing out all the things that Shumlin had done or not done. Mm. And that made people stop and think. And then later on in the campaign, when Scott Milne also verified these types of things, that it made a difference that way rather than the votes that Feliciano.
Dan Feliciano, kind of the spotlight.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, because he was saying all the things that everybody thought Scott Milne should be saying.
All right. I wonder why then his vote count wasn't higher.
Well, because they thought that Scott, in the end, when he began really focusing on his campaign, began to be saying the same things, and they thought, well, if he's going to be the same kind, why not give it to him?
Okay. All right. John, what do you make of that theory? And there's no question Scott Milne did get better as the campaign went along. I mean, he couldn't have gotten much worse than how he rolled it out.
Well, he started late, and it was a learning experience from the get-go. He was trying to do a lot of things that he'd never done before, and you know, every time he got a second or third chance to do something, he improved. You know, from the first debate, which you moderated, was a disaster, and he got better. He wasn't great, he wasn't polished, but he at least, you know, stood a better showing for himself. As for Dan Feliciano's role in the race, I think he did provide a service, and he did have a role as the spotlight. It's hard for me to see that Dan Feliciano, who took 4%, has any lessons for Scott Milne, who won 45.5%. This isn't just because Scott Milne, you know, stole Dan Feliciano's thunder. I think a lot more of it was that Scott Milne had a certain, you know, rough-hewn appeal. He was an acceptable figure to people who were looking for somebody other than Shumlin. He was an acceptable figure to people on the right and in the middle, and even some on the left. He did move somewhat to the right on health care as the campaign went along, but he never went anywhere near as far as Dan Feliciano. And, you know, I remember back in July and August when people were saying that Milne ought to get out of the race and let Feliciano carry the standard. And, you know, I think Feliciano did play a role, but I don't think it was anything near where, you know, he inspired the Milne tidal wave or anything like that.
Let's go to Sheldon. Hi, Ruth. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm really thrilled that Scott Milne did as well as he did. I feel that the media the media was terrible towards him, tearing down his plans. Whatever he said, they tore him to shreds. They should have just been reporting what his plan was and let him explain it, but no, they just tore it to shreds. Whatever, I'm glad he hasn't conceded the race. I'm still supporting Milne. If, and probably most likely, the legislature will elect Shumlin, but Shumlin's problems are just beginning because the people who voted for him really wanted single payer, and he's not going to be able to give it to him, to the people. And Scott Milne said that. He repeated it. Single payer is dead. Governor Shumlin did not go about presenting single payer in a way that would help the people of Vermont. He hurt the people of Vermont. He drove people out of business because he wouldn't come forward with what his plans were. And so people just went out of business. I know that for a fact. So anyways, his problems, if he is governor, are just going to get worse because his base is really going to be upset with him.
All right.
So thank you.
Thanks for your call, Ruth.
Well, she's right. I think there will be, you know, there were people who supported, who chose Peter Shumlin in 2010 over Doug Racine and Deb Markowitz and Matt Dunn because because Peter Shumlin said that he would be an advocate for single payer and that that was his primary focus. And he still says that, but he's going to have a very hard time delivering. And if he doesn't, then I think he will be a disappointment to the liberal base in the Democratic Party. I think he's still got a shot to deliver, but like I said, the first thing he's got to do is get the current system to work. And then he might have some credibility to apply to his own reform plan, whatever that is. And, you know, in retrospect, I think it was really bad of him to keep putting off the unveiling of single payer. I think it kind of died on the vine in a way, you know. He might have had a better chance of gaining support for it if he really started as he was supposed to, you know, last year or the year before.
But everybody would have beat up on that plan. Whatever the plan is, people are going to tear it apart, John. You know
well,
that.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's why it was always going to be a very heavy lift, as he kept saying. And it's an even heavier lift now. And he shouldn't, you know, I think he could still pull it off. But that's not what he needs to focus on now. You know, he needs to focus on fixing the current system, figuring out what the most immediate problems are in Vermont, and fixing them. After that, then if he wants to go back to single payer, you know, he might have some credibility and some, you know, some political capital to spend. And the other thing I want to say before we move on from Ruth is that, you know, what she said about Scott Milne cannot be underestimated. You know, Scott Milne went out on a limb. He allowed himself, you know, he was made fun of. And frankly, if you saw him in a press conference or in one of the early debates, you would have thought that he was just a complete bumbling fool. That's how he came across, you know. And it's not that reporters are liberals and they're in the tank for Shumlin. It's, you know, reporters saw what they saw, and they saw a guy who was completely inept at what seemed to be the fundamentals of politics. You know, and he got somewhat better as the race went on. And as I said earlier, he was the perfect foil to Peter Shumlin, who was, you know, polished and professional and distant. And Scott Milne was rough and imperfect and seemed to be more accessible in some ways.
And he was open to ideas. And authentic, what you mentioned before.
Yeah.
You know, I think that while, you know, that may have come under criticism from people like you and me, that has an appeal to people.
Yep.
Let's go to Callis. Jerry, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I voted for Scott Mill myself because I was in on a lot of things he had to say during the campaign, and I liked the way he handled his campaign. He didn't, you know, want to spend a whole bunch of money to beat someone out. And I think that is really helped a lot of people to vote for him. And I'm sorry that he lost, but not by much. But anyway, like you've been saying right along, Shumlin's got a hard road to hoe now. And I hope he smartens up a little bit about all of this stuff. He's gung-ho, and he is a politician, and he's not for the people. He don't even listen to people. You know, if you write him a letter or call him or something, he just talks out of both sides of his mouth, and he don't really give you an answer. And that's one of the reasons why I voted for Scott Mill. If you called him and he'd get back to you and he'd, you know, whatever your question was, he answered it in a sensible way. Common sense. You got to use common sense. And Shumlin, ever since 2010, is nothing but the House and the Senate that was loaded with Democrats and progressives, and all they did was raise taxes on everybody. You can't keep doing that. We can't afford to live here in Vermont because of that. And a lot of people that lost their jobs during the recession haven't even found decent jobs now, part-time. That's about it. That has to be taken care of. We've got to bring up the economy, put people back to work. And then maybe we can think about something of changing the health care, but not until that happens, because people are not going to stay in Vermont. That's all I've got to say, and I'm sorry I've come down with a heck of a cold or something.
You sound great. Come on.
So
don't,
anyway,
listen.
That's what I have to say.
Don't get sick. It's too. You can't afford to get sick right now. All right, let me have John comment on what you had to say. Thank you for your call.
I'll say something that Scott Milne said in one of the profile pieces, and I apologize to the reporter because I don't remember where I read this, but, you know, in talking about his very unusual strategy where he spent little money and he didn't say anything and he waited until the last couple of weeks to start presenting policy ideas. And he said, you know, what I'd really like to do is the old-fashioned stand for election, where I present myself, I present my ideas, I present myself as a person, and let the people decide whether they want me to serve or not. Without all the stuff about politics, without the fundraising, without the going around the state, without the, all the trappings of modern-day politics, just the old-fashioned, here I am, I'm willing to serve, do you want me to serve? And that was very appealing to people. I think people really do want a simpler kind of politics than we're getting these days, a more authentic kind of politics. And you know, a lot of politicians would do well to study the Scott Milne playbook, as weird as that would have sounded a week ago. You know, he did a lot of things right, as it turned out.
Yeah, I compared him to, you know, the Being There character, you know, with sort of the blank slate.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a way, that was as some people have said earlier in the show, the fact that he was open to ideas and he was willing to listen and he was willing to consider conservative and liberal ideas was, we thought it was a weakness, but it was a strength.
Let's go to Lincoln. Owen, good morning.
Morning, Mark. I guess there's two things, and I joined late, so maybe you've already discussed this. One is Shumlin's energy policy and how credible it is, the notion that we're going to get to 95% renewable energy within a fairly short period of time. It's not believable, and I wonder how many Vermonters have that same position on it. The second one kind of comes to character. A few weeks ago, Eric Davis was on the show, and he mentioned that he was surprised that some of the campaign fundraising and Shumlin's contributors in the relationship that had to money that they were earning or getting from the state. I mean, two of Shumlin's largest contributors were the head of NRC and the head of Efficiency Vermont, and you've got to ask, is there a little quid pro quo going on there? And that's an issue I think would have belonged to the press to bring forward, and it's kind of a disappointment that didn't see more light of day.
Okay, and I think you mean NRG, but let me have John comment. Thank you, yeah. I want to appreciate the call.
Well, it wasn't just the energy money. It was, you know, Shumlin raising money from everybody everywhere, and seeming to be more in touch with their needs than with the, you know, the needs of people. You know, you contrast that. If you look at Peter Shumlin's donor list compared with Phil Scott's donor list, for instance, and, you know, Phil Scott didn't raise as much money, but
almost all the money he raised was from inside of Vermont. And, you know, a lot of it was from corporate interests. You know, he got money from you know, fuel dealers and from road builders and from retail and all those people. But at least it was from inside Vermont. I think that wanting to move to renewable energy is actually one of the things that drives Governor Shumlin. You know, he started his political career as an opponent of Vermont Yankee in southeast Vermont. I don't think there's a corruption there, but there's certainly a perception of corruption, and there's certainly a broader perception that Governor Shumlin is out there raising money constantly and hobnobbing with the well-connected and the rich, and he's not with us, and that's something he has to change.
Thank you, John. I appreciate your time this morning very much. TheVPO.org is where you'll find John Walters and Blogosphere. Have a great rest of the week, John.
All right, thank you. And thank you to you and to your audience for a really good discussion.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm grateful, too. We'll take a quick break here before we wrap up. We'll be back in a moment.
We are high performance, low pressure. Walker Volkswagen on the Barry Montpelier Road is celebrating its grand reopening, and you are invited. We have finished our dealership's renovation and expansion project and are excited to share our passion for Volkswagen with you. We are so excited that we are giving away a new Volkswagen Beetle. I told you we are seriously celebrating. Take advantage of Walker Volkswagen's grand reopening celebration with our deeply discounted upfront pricing that eliminates all the gimmicks and stressful negotiations in buying your next car. When combined with 0% financing on every 2014 Volkswagen model, you can save thousands of dollars. Join in Walker Volkswagen's grand reopening celebration on the Barry Montpelier Road. See how you can be driving an affordable German-engineered European-style Volkswagen. Stop by, call, or click walkervt.com to see why we are Vermont's source for everything Volkswagen. Oh, and remember to ask us about the Volkswagen Beetle giveaway.
It's no secret, Mejuron Supermarket is a great place to shop. I'm Tom Mejuron. For over seven decades, Mejuron's has been catering to the needs of the Mad River Valley and beyond. We have custom-cut meats, fresh produce and seafood, regular and organic grocery, locally produced foods galore, topped off by an extraordinary wine and beer department and a state liquor agency. Shop Mejuron Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center, Waitsfield.
So I was just pondering this morning some winners and losers. Here's one that I came up with that you may not have. How about Jeb Spaulding? I'll leave you on that note today. We're going to talk tomorrow about the defense of beef. I know a lot of talk about how bad it is for you, but we're going to get another viewpoint on that. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you to all of you that called this morning. It really makes the program much better, and I greatly appreciate it. Thank you. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is coming your way next.
I'm Rita Foley. Amber Vincent, one of two nurses who contracted the Ebola virus after caring for a patient at a hospital in Dallas, says they were not particularly well prepared to treat an Ebola victim.
We did not get much training. The first time that I...